Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Insurance is a Crime right after this. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage. And the Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people. The Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press of political and social activities free from government surveillance. You know, I wished I'd have thought of that, but that quotation comes from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, you know, our princes and our politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control. But you and I have not heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years. And that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts. It doesn't come from our political process, our politicians, our lawyers, or our bureaucrats. Old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, I'd like to echo that by saying, "You give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either," because the real power in America, indeed, the real power in the world, is in our courts. It's not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedures available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email, send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about insurance. Insurance is a crime. I pointed that out to you last time when we took a look at the auto insurance industry, a very profitable segment of the insurance business. All insurance is profitable. But auto insurance just happens to be right up there in the top 400, you know, when we're talking about profitability. They pay out 11 cents of every premium dollar to claims. Your chances of claiming a casualty are only once every 33 years on average. An insured driver will have a claim, and his claim will only total $1,835 after he has already paid in his 33-year period, $26,400. So it's a numbers game is what it is. And insurance companies are profitable businesses, and they're in business to make money. That's the purpose for business. If you thought business was there for the purposes, let's say, of employing people or making goods and services or serving the public or paying taxes, you're wrong. The business of business is profit, nothing more, nothing less. Business does not exist to employ people. Business does not exist to pay taxes. Business does not exist to provide goods and services to people. That's not the purpose of business. It may be true that business employs people, pays taxes, and provides goods and services, but that's not why it's there. And that's not why insurance is there either. It's not there to protect people, to make you whole. It's not there to pay taxes or employ people. It's there to make profit, just like any other business. That's the business of business, and they do a hell of a good job at it. And I don't blame them. More power to them. Now, I don't buy insurance. I don't buy home insurance, casualty insurance. I don't buy health insurance. I don't buy any insurance. And the reason that I don't buy it is because it's a criminal activity. It's against the law. You're not supposed to do it. We were told, don't do that. Now, I'm familiar with the fact that most people do, and they believe in it, and they think it's good for them. I just wanted to bring up the conversation because, as I pointed out last time, you know, insurance is a given, and the debate is never between insurance or no insurance. The debate is always between mandatory versus voluntary, or fault or no fault, or insurance versus no insurance is never on the table. How much insurance should I have might be on the table, but should I or should I not have it is never on the table. Nobody ever talks about that. So that's why I thought, let's bring it up, and let me show you what's wrong with insurance and why it is that there's a better way. And the better way is the Ten Commandment model. The Ten Commandment model with no insurance, practicing strict liability, has a better return, has a better overall result for the average Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife than buying insurance. And that's primarily because insurance impoverishes you. And the poorer you are, or the less money you make, the more it impoverishes you, and the more the penalty is. If you're rich and you got lots of money, and you pay, you know, 10 or 15% of your income on insurance, it's no big deal. But if you're only making $20,000 to start with, and you're spending, you know, 15, 20% of your income on insurance, well, now that impacts upon your standard of living. So let's take a look at this. If you're making $100,000 a year, right now, pulling in 100 grand, it puts you in the top 5% of income earners in the country. At this moment in time, about half the people in America make $47,000 a year or more, and about half the people make $47,000 or less. Now, that number is going down because of the economic crisis, because of the depression. But, you know, up until recent times, $47,000 is what we call the median average income. Now, just because there's a depression on doesn't mean that your insurance rates are going to go down. Hey, that doesn't impact upon the law that requires you to buy it if you're going to drive a car, or your need for it if you've got a mortgage on your house and they require fire insurance and homeowners insurance and so on. But the moral to the story is that the less you make, the greater the percentage that it takes out of your disposable income. And so the poorer you become. You become what my dad used to call insurance poor. It means people have got so much insurance, they're just poor as a result of it. Well, now, if you're making $100,000 a year, on average, you'll be spending about 6% of that $100,000, $6,000 a year on insurance, excluding health insurance. Excluding health, but all the rest of your insurance policies, you know, your fire insurance and the product liability insurance and fire insurance, casualty insurance, business insurance, life insurance, you know, all these insurances that you're buying are about 6%. Now, health insurance is in a class all by itself, all by itself. On average, the amount is $12,000 a year, $12,000 a year. Now, of course, they talk a lot about 44 million Americans don't have health insurance. Hell, I'm one of those. I don't have health insurance. I don't need it, don't want it. In fact, I'm doing everything I can to avoid it. I'll get up early in the morning and work hard to avoid health insurance. So far in our country, only one state has a mandatory health insurance. That's Massachusetts, and they'll fine you $900 a year. Your fine is a $900 fine if they catch you living in Massachusetts without health insurance. Now, there are some religious objectors out there. I'm one of those. On religious grounds, I don't have health insurance because it's a crime. It's a criminal activity. But $12,000 a year. See, if you're making $100,000 a year and you're paying $12,000 on health insurance, add the $12,000 plus $6,000, that's $18,000 a year on insurance. I mean, even a guy who's making big bucks in the top 5% of the income earners in the country, hell, it takes 18% of what you're creating and producing just to pay your insurance, for crying out loud. Huh? Hey, wake up here. Smell some coffee. Now, if you're a poor guy, now here's a lady, a woman, I saw her on the Blair News Hour the other day. She's making $48,000 a year, so she's right at the median average. Median average income, $48,000 a year. And she's paying $12,000 a year on her health insurance. Now, that's insurance poor. 25% of her insurance. Doesn't this lady drive a car? Doesn't she need auto insurance? Does she live in downtown Los Angeles? And is she one of those that's paying $3,500 a year for auto insurance? Or is she living in Isabella, Missouri and paying $600? See, I don't know where she lives. I pointed that out to you last time. But depending on where you live in the country, you know, they can really gouge you on this auto insurance. Camden, New Jersey, $2,000 a year. These numbers, I don't deny it. They're a little stale. You know, they're 1996, 1994 numbers. You know, they're 10, 12 years old. But as I pointed out, all that changes over time isn't the insurance company's profit margin. It's inflation goes up, and you're paying more and more to inflation, and your auto insurance and the percentages, they remain about the same. There's very little difference in the number of accidents or licensed drivers or miles driven and percentages. And the insurance company knows that. And see, the insurance company capitalizes on that. And insurance companies are not doing you any favors whatsoever, none. Let's just take a look at it. Down on the Gulf Coast, there was a big hurricane down there in 2005. Remember that was called Hurricane Katrina? Now, if you live down on the Gulf Coast and you have a mortgage, the bank requires that you have hurricane insurance. Now, you know, at first blush, that makes all the sense in the world. I mean, after all, that's where hurricanes occur. Now, insurance companies are not dumbbells. Insurance companies and the people that work for them, these are institutions. And, they, you know, just take a look at John Hancock Insurance or Mutual of New York or Money or whatever it is, you know, or, you know, you're in safe hands with Allstate. These are institutions. These institutions are run by people who go to business school and by attorneys and lawyers and accountants and CPAs. These people are professionals. They're very knowledgeable in their field. So when an insurance company is going to write a policy, say you got a $300,000 house sitting on the beach there in Biloxi, Mississippi, and you want to insure that house, you know, you're sitting there saying, well, I'm expecting a hurricane to come through here and knock this house down, destroy it totally, and I'm going to end up with a $300,000 loss, and I'm going to need to rebuild my house. And so you go into the insurance company and say, hey, I want to buy an insurance policy, and I want you to rebuild my house when this hurricane comes by. Now, the insurance companies know, and they have histories, you know, and they look back at Hurricane Camille, you know, back in 1969, and they say, well, this is how much that one cost us. And then they look at Hurricane Andrew, you know, down in Florida, you know, and they say, well, this is how much that one cost us, and so on. And so people in the institution, the lawyers, the accountants, the businessmen, they take a look at this and they say, how much premium do we need to charge this guy? And they say, well, for a $300,000 house, now based upon the number of houses in the community and based upon this and that and another thing, they come up with a number. And they say, well, you know, if we could get everybody in the community to buy this insurance, we would need to charge, let's just pick a number here, $500 a year. But you see, they know they can't get everybody in the community to sign on, which is why they go to the legislature with auto insurance to get mandatory insurance passed in so they can get everybody signed on. Because the more people that participate in the program, the lesser or the lower, the cheaper the premiums will be. And so the higher the premiums, the fewer the people you're going to have. I mean, if you're making, you know, $48,000 a year and I want $30,000 a year for health insurance, I'm not going to have very many takers. If I could get the cost of this health insurance down to $500 a year, my God, everybody would want it. But I have to balance that with what I know are going to be payouts. There's going to be payouts. I know that. But I need to limit those payouts. And so some businessman goes into the legal department and says, look, we need to write an insurance policy against the casualty called a hurricane. And we look at statistics and we see that most of the damage in a hurricane comes from water damage, flood damage, tidal surge. And so they simply write in a paragraph 18 and say, we don't pay for tidal surges, water damages, and floods, period. We pay for hurricane damage. And hurricane damage is straight line winds. So they write that into the policy. Now, if they tell you that, they know that you probably won't buy the policy. So they instruct their insurance salesman to emphasize the positive and minimize the negative. In other words, tell this guy that in Hurricane Camille, 60% of the houses along the coast were damaged. Point out that 30% of those houses were totally destroyed. Make this guy fearful and timid. And then when you get him to the point where he's fearful and he's ready to buy the insurance over here, don't tell him that we don't pay for flood or tidal surge damage because his house is located on the beach. So don't tell him that. Because we know that you're not going to read this policy because we're not even going to give you the policy to read until after you've already signed up. And then we're going to write this policy in very fine print so that you'd have to have a magnifying glass to read it. That way you'll probably never read it. Now, you believe that you're fully covered and you're paying your insurance premiums every year, $1,000 or $500 a year or whatever it happens to be. And the insurance company is collecting these premiums. And you know, the chances of a hurricane hitting Biloxi, Mississippi is maybe 1 in 50 years. So it only comes up once every 50 years. And so for 49 years, we're going to collect all these premiums and pay out nothing. And then one time there's going to be a hurricane Katrina. There's going to be a Camille. One time I'm going to have to pay out. Now, on this one event that we're going to have to pay out, we want to limit our payments. In other words, we want to collect the premiums, but we don't want to pay this guy for his damage. Okay, so the tidal surge comes in, wipes your house out, you run down the insurance company and say, okay, here it is, been paying my premiums now for 50 years. The hurricane came, it's called Hurricane Katrina, blew my house down. So the claims adjuster, that's me, you know, we come out and we take a look and we say, well, where's your house? And you say, well, you know, see, this big wave came in and just wiped my house out, and it's sitting up there about 5 blocks north of here, scattered all over the landscape. And so I say, okay, well, thank you very much. I got all the information. I go back to my office, and I write up a nice letter denying your claim. And then you get the letter, and it denies your claim because your house was destroyed by water, a tidal surge, and in looking in your policy, we don't cover water damage. We only cover straight-line winds, hurricane damage. And you're just blown away. You're just really ticked off. You say, well, that isn't right. That isn't what the agent told me 49 years ago when I bought this policy, 19 years ago when he came in and sat in my living room and told me all these wonderful stories about how people had been made whole. And so you're really bummed out. And I don't blame you. I'd be bummed out too. You paid your premiums. You thought. That's what you believed. You were sincere. But that isn't the way the game is played. No, Bob, that's not the way the game is played. The insurance company has played the game because they're businessmen. They knew about how many houses are destroyed and about how much the average costs and about the tidal surges that come in and how high they are. And they were familiar with that, and they wrote that up. See, it was the insurance company that wrote the terms and conditions of the contract. You didn't have any input at all into that contract. And the insurance company, they got another thing going for them. See, they go to the legislature, and they give campaign contributions to those senators and representatives and governors and public officials so that those public officials will write the laws that they want on the books that tell how much they're going to pay and how they're going to pay and how they collect and all about it. In other words, the insurance industry, as a matter of law and as a matter of contract, is written for the benefit of the insurance company, and it's written against your best interest every single time. Every paragraph, every clause, every sentence, every word. in both the law and the contract is written against you and for the company. Now, if perchance the hurricane comes in, straight line winds, hits your house, blows it down on the third Wednesday of an odd-numbered month with pink elephants walking down the street, and all of these events happen just exactly the way the policy reads, they'll pay you like a slot machine. But hell, you know, and they know, and everybody knows the chances of that actually happening and all of those events occurring in that sequence or that order is nigh on impossible. They'll pay one in a thousand. It's like a slot machine. It is true that if you put your money in the slot machine, you could win $1 million. It's possible. And after about every $3, $4, $5 million is put into the slot machine, it pays off one. Just like the lottery. It is possible to win the lottery. There's no doubt about it. Every time there's a lottery, there isn't a winner every time, but the lottery gets bigger, and at some point in time, somebody or some multiple of people are going to win the lottery. But for every $1 million they pay out, they take in 84. Your odds are 84 million to one. So when they pay out $1, they took in 84. Now, that's good for the state, and it's good for the lottery. It's good for the numbers racket. Hell, it's good for the insurance companies. All of these things work for somebody. That's why they promote them. I mean, we're not listening to insurance ads. Banks aren't telling you that you have to buy life insurance in order to get a mortgage from the bank for no good reason. All of these banks, insurance companies, government agencies, politicians, you know, hell, even Luigi, who's selling protection in downtown New York, all of these people benefit from it. But my question to you is, well, how does that benefit you? How does that make you any money? How does paying $500 a year premiums for hurricane insurance benefit you when your house is destroyed and they won't pay you? Or they'll pay you 10 cents on the dollar or 50 cents on the dollar or 75 cents on the dollar. And then you got to wait for months and months and sometimes years, and you got to argue and fight, and sometimes you got to take them to court, and you got to have a jury make an award, and then they take it to appeal and they run it through the appellate process. Do you know you can have a case with an insurance company that can drag out for 11 years? Did you know that? Now, let me show you why it's that way. See, I'm an old-timey insurance adjuster, and I'm going to explain this to you so you understand it. Insurance companies take your premiums, and they don't just put it over here in a box in a vault someplace waiting for hurricanes to come along. They take your money, and they go out, and they build hotels in Yucatan in Mexico, and they build big office buildings in downtown Manhattan. And then they charge rent on those buildings and hotels and motels and so on. See, they invest your money. And the insurance company expects to make 10% per annum, compounded annually, on the amount of money from your premiums that they invest. That's their goal. That's their program. So they take your $500 and the $500 from a lot of other people, and they bundle that up into $1 million, $2 million, $5 million, and they build a hotel over in Maui. And then when you go to Maui, you pay your hotel bill, and you know they amortize that mortgage down, and the insurance company's making 10% a year. Now that's their program. That's what they do. That's called business. Now, if they have to pay you money, you know, that ain't good for business. If your house blows down and they gotta pay you $300,000 to rebuild your house, then they've got to sell the motel. They've got to take somebody else's premium. You know, you could get to the point where you got more claims than you've got money, then you bankrupt the insurance company. And that isn't impossible. That goes on all the time. Insurance companies go out of business regularly because they're overextended, over-leveraged, they call it. Now, keep in mind that the insurance company writes these contracts. They want to collect your premiums, but they don't want to pay you any money. And that's why they have the program that they have. It's why they're as successful as they are. So it's written by them, it's written for them and for their benefit, and they do that intelligently, intentionally, and they succeed at it because the law allows it, because they also write the laws and have them passed. And they support those politicians that support the insurance industry. And all of the big businesses do that. The pharmaceutical industry does the same thing. Auto industry does that. Steel industry. All the industries. Banking. They all support the politicians. And then the politicians support those industries and their lobbyists and their interests. And their interests are always counter to your interests. The banking industry has laws enacted concerning credit cards. Every credit card contract benefits the bank. It's written by the bank. It's written by the bank's attorneys. It is legally permitted by the legislature. The interest rates are written into the law. The processes by which you can get this credit card, in which you can sue the bank, in which you can get compensation or so on, it's all written by the legislature, and it's written by the banks, and it's written for the bank. It's written by the bank, and it's written against you. And that's the way that game is played. Now, if you want to play in the game, get after it. Don't let me get in your way. But now the creator of the universe says that this is no good for you. You don't want to do that. You want to practice strict liability. Just me and you and the gatepost, and I'll take care of you. Now, insurance is immensely profitable, and self-insurance is just as profitable for you as it is for the insurance company, which is why you ought to be thinking about self-insurance. Now, I'm not the only guy that says that insurance is bad or that insurance companies are taking advantage of you. If you'll take a look at auto insurance company profits, they are much greater under no-fault insurance than they are under tort claim insurance. And if you take a look at the statistics, which is put out by an organization here, which is called Citizen.org, it's www.citizen.org, they publish a website and they've got the numbers out here. And in 1996, the auto insurance companies under no-fault took in $107.6 billion. And the profit on that auto insurance was $5.4 billion. And their return on investment was $13 billion. They invested your money, and then they made $13 billion off of this $107 billion worth of premiums earned. Then they took the $107 billion out and they invested it. See, they made their 10%. That was their goal. Now, back in 1990, their earned premiums were $78 billion. Their profit on auto insurance was $2.2 billion, and their return on investment was $3.8 billion. So the profits due to underwriting investment gain does not include investment gains from loss reserves, but rather it includes this thing called no-fault. Remember, there was this big controversy. Well, who is it that came up with the no-fault insurance idea? It was the insurance industry. And then they wrote it up, and they said, here's what we want, and they took it to the legislature, and the legislature passed the legislation, so now they got it. And now it's much more profitable than tort insurance. See how that works? Right. So it works against you, it works for the auto insurance industry. Now, here's another consumer group. It's called the www.consunion.org. And it says, consumer groups decry auto insurance rate overcharges and windfall profits for companies. I got to take a break here and give you a reminder, and I'll come back and we'll take a look at, well, what are these overcharges and what are these windfalls for the companies? Because it's all written into the law. Nobody's going to jail. Nobody's going to send you back a quarter for these overcharges. And it's because the overcharges are provided for in the law. Hell, the insurance company wrote the law, took it into the legislature, said, here, enact this. They did. Is it excessive? Is it unconscionable? Is it unethical? Yeah, all of the above. But there's nothing illegal about it. How can it be illegal? We wrote the law. The thing that makes it illegal is the God of the universe, the Creator. He said, don't practice insurance. But, you know, hey, Bob, you're smarter than the average run-of-the-mill God out here, aren't you? And that's why you buy insurance, and that's why you vote the way you vote, isn't it? All right, now let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by simply calling and asking for it. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are going to necessarily reciprocate and endorse and recommend the Law Hour and editorial review. We need to keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about insurance as a crime. Now, let's take a look at some of this criminal activity that goes on. It's immoral, it's unethical, but it's not necessarily illegal. Down in Austin, Texas, consumer groups announced today the results of a study demonstrating that auto insurance consumers in Texas were overcharged $1.2 billion in 1997. The results of the study released today show a total windfall of more than $2 billion for insurance companies in Texas, resulting from drastically reduced payouts beginning in 1996. Now remember, the insurance industry expects a 10% return on their investments. That's what they're working for. Now, the insurance company invests the money, and then they have what's known as the average daily balance. The average daily balance. So as an insurance adjuster, I was instructed, do not pay this claim when it's due. All right? Why? Why don't we want to pay it? In other words, you put in a claim. We process it. We come to a conclusion. We owe you the $300,000. Well, then why don't we just write you a check and pay? Because the minute we write the check, then the money will be deducted from our checking account. It will be deducted from our average daily balance. It will be deducted from the 10% that we make profit off of those premiums. And we call that the average daily balance. Now, insurance companies have money invested in big buildings and little buildings, and they have it invested in banks and CDs and treasury bonds and municipal bonds and interest-free bonds and tax-free bonds. And you know, they've got money invested everywhere, but their average is running 10%. Now, watch this. We owe you $300,000 times 10% per annum. So let's take $300,000 times 0.10, and that's $30,000. So if we owed you $30,000, and we didn't pay you for one whole year. There's 360 business days in a calendar year. So you got 365 days in a year, but for business accounting purposes, we count 360 days. Well, $30,000 divided by 360 days. Let's just take 30,000 and let's divide that by 360. That's $83.33 a day. So now let's just look at our calendar over here. Let's say that it's January 15th. And we've come to the conclusion that we owe you $300,000, all right? If I write you the check today, you get your $300,000. If I write you the check tomorrow, you get your $300,000, but we get an extra $83. In other words, every day that I delay the delivery of this check to you, our company is making $83.33 a day. All right, so here's what I do. I call you on the phone, or better yet, I just ignore you and I let you call me on the phone. And I say, oh, yes, Mr. Johnson, I have a note on my desk, and I have been meaning to call you, which is a damn lie. I don't have a note on my desk, and I didn't mean to call you. I'm stalling you off. I'm making $83 a day. I don't want to talk to you at all. But I need to keep up customer relations, and so I tell you that I've been meaning to call you. You see, the application, the claim that you put in has not been processed because there was a mistake made on it. And I need you to come into the office at your earliest convenience, Mr. Jones, as soon as you can, to fill out another claim so that we can reprocess it. And you say, this is crazy. You jump up and down. You're just mad as hell. And you say, I've already been waiting 3 months, and I put my claim in. See, over this past 3 months, while you've put your claim in, see, the day your house blew down is the day you suffered your damage. That's the day I owed you the $300,000. Hell, 90 days later, let's just take 33 times 90 days, I've already made $7,499.70. I've made $7,500. And this is just putting it through in the normal period of time. Okay? And I made $7,500. Now, you got to come in, fill this thing out, and it's going to take me another. And I say, I'm going to put expedite on this claim. I'm going to personally call headquarters in Chicago. Hell, I'm not going to write expedite on this. I'm not going to call anybody in Chicago. I'm just lying through my teeth telling you that I'm going to do all these things. Make you feel real good, Bob. See? All right, so a couple months goes by. And I don't call you, but you call me and I say, Bob, I've got good news. Your claim has been approved. It's been approved. But I don't have all good news. The bad news is it's been approved for $200,000, but there's a question as to whether or not the policy will cover this damage done to your sunroom and the loss of this and that and another thing and five other things, and you're sitting there going, oh, my God. And I say, look, I can deliver the check this afternoon for $200,000, but not $300,000. So you say, well, I'm not going to take $200,000. I'm going to sue you. Well, okay, Bob. Now, how long is it going to take you to sue me and get this thing through the judicial process? Well, you know, if everything goes right, about 3 years. Now, listen, we owe you the $300,000. Hell, we owe you the $300,000 the day your house blew down. You know, but so far, 5 months has gone by. Let's see, how much have I made on 5 months? $300,000. And I'm making $83.33 a day. So we'll take 83.33 times 150 days. Hell, by now, I've made $12,500. Told you I'm going to give you $200,000 instead of $300,000. I'm going to stiff you by $100,000. If you accept the $200,000, then I make $100,000 profit, don't I? I mean, hell, I owed you $300,000. If I only pay you $200,000, I make $100,000 pure profit. You see, we've already programmed in the full loss of the $300,000 into our calculations when we sold you the premium and charged you $500 a year. Remember that? So now I've collected the premium. Now I want to stiff you, which will be the equivalent of charging you one-third more, or about $735 a year on your insurance premium. Hey, is this ethical? No. Is it moral? No. Is it criminal? No. No. Hell, we wrote this into the law. We wrote this into the contract. We wrote the contract. We put in the terms and conditions we wanted. You haven't got anything in this contract that benefits you. Not one line. Not one paragraph. Not one word of this contract benefits you. Now, we might have written it so that it sounds like it benefits you. Let me give you an illustration of that. When we write up the fat law in the hamburger, you see, God in the Bible tells you, you shall eat no manner of fat. So we want to raise fat cattle. Fat cattle have 25% fat. So if you got a 1,000-pound cow, you kill the cow, you get 500 pounds of meat. 500 pounds of meat times 25% fat. So 25% would be about 125 pounds of fat in this 500 pounds of meat. What in the hell am I going to do with that? When was the last time you went into the butcher store, or butcher market, or the butcher counter, or the meat market, and you said, give me 125 pounds of suet. I just got to go home and cook up some fat and gobble it down. People don't buy fat to eat. Hell, I don't want fat. And so I got this 125 pounds of fat. So I go to the legislature and I say, listen, I'm from the Swift and Company Armor Star Meatpacking Consortium, and we want a law passed concerning fat. And here's what we propose. We'd like the law to read something like, if any meatpacker, distributor, wholesaler, or retailer shall be found to put more than 25% fat into his hamburger, he shall be guilty of a misdemeanor and fined not more than $1,000 and jailed not more than 1 year in the county jail. See, the way I word it makes it look like, by God, if anybody's out there putting more than 25% fat in a hamburger, why, he ought to be locked up in jail. Sounds like. Hell, that's my authorization to put 25% fat in the hamburger. 40% in the hot dog. You know, those hot dogs that you're eating, you know, those Oscar Mayer weenies over there, 40% fat. It ain't just Oscar Mayer either, it's everybody else. Bologna, you know, those lunch meats that you're eating, 40% fat. That's what we're sticking in there. Now, is it any wonder that you people get atherosclerosis and then you have heart attacks and strokes, which is the biggest killer here in America? I know your creator told you don't eat fat, but, you know, hell, you're smarter than God. I wouldn't deny that. See where we're going with this? Now, I'd like to make a suggestion. I told you yesterday, I said, I don't have any health insurance. But there are 19 health laws in the Bible. And if you'll practice those 19 health laws, you won't eat any fat. Well, you know, might scoff up a little bit, but your body can handle a little bit. It just can't handle 25%. So every time you go to McDonald's or Burger King or Wendy's or one of these hamburger joints, you know you're eating hamburger. The hamburger joint ain't cheating you, because the law provides for 25% hamburger, fat in the hamburger. The law is written so that it has 25% in there. So when they're serving you hamburger with 25% fat, hell, ain't nobody breaking the law. We make the law. See, we just make laws that violate the law of God so that we can make more profit and gain. I mean, after all, I'm a meat packer, and I got to buy this meat from this farmer over here. The farmer is raising fat cattle, and he doesn't want to raise lean cattle. Lean cattle only gain a pound a day of lean meat, but fat cattle gain 2.7 pounds a day. So when I'm feeding these cows my corn, they're gaining 2.7 pounds of meat and fat combined today versus 1 pound of meat a day. Which would I rather have? So the meat packer, he goes to the legislature and he says, hey, this is the law I need passed. Now the insurance company comes along, see, and they got to make a profit off of this. And so they go to the legislature and they get the laws passed that they want. So all the laws that are on the books are commercial. Comes under Article 1, Section 8 of your Constitution. Commerce and Commerce Clause. Congress is in a commercial business. They're out here to make money. They're not out here making money for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. Hell, you're the one paying the premium. They're making money for Armor Star and meatpacking industry and the auto industry and the, you know, the people that are going to Washington, you know, sucking off the trough up there. Okay, well, who else paying for that? You are, the taxpayers, the consumers. So as a claims adjuster, my job is to stall you off and to make you so discouraged over time that, you know, pretty soon you'll just give up and say, give me the damn $200,000 and I'll just build a smaller house. Well, now I screw you out of $100,000. Meanwhile, I've made $12,000 in interest on the average daily balance. And you're just mad as hell, ain't going to take it no more, and so you drop the insurance. But now you got to borrow $100,000 from the bank, so you go to the bank to borrow the $100,000 to go with the $200,000 to replace your house, right? and the bank says you got to buy hurricane insurance or we won't loan you the money. Okay, so you're not going to buy the insurance from me. So you're going to go buy it from Brand X. Big deal. Because Brand X just did the same thing to your neighbor, and your neighbor's mad as hell, so he's going to drop Brand X and come over and buy from me. How in the hell does that benefit you or your neighbor? It benefits me and it benefits Brand X. Doesn't benefit you at all. And like as not, I don't know that this is true now, but like as not, based upon my experience, I think the banks get a kickback from the insurance industry. Because when you go to the bank, they require that you buy hurricane insurance, auto insurance, life insurance, and so on. Yeah, they don't require that you buy it from their insurance company or from any particular insurance company. They just require that you buy it. Well, that's the way the medical profession works. And a lot of other businesses, you know, I used to be in the contracting business. And so if somebody recommends me, I usually give them a finder's fee. So you go to your doctor, and he's just a general practitioner, you know, just a Joe Sixpack doctor. And he does the tests on you, and he says, oh, my God, you got brain tumor here. So he says, brain tumor? So I can see it's a brain tumor. But I'm not a brain surgeon, so I'm going to recommend that you go over to Dr. Gilmore. You know, and so I recommend, and I send you over to Dr. Gilmore. Now, Dr. Gilmore takes a look at you and says, well, yeah, we can take care of that tumor, all right. I knock out, you know, about 3 tumors a week, and we need about $40,000 to knock out this tumor. We'll just cut it out. Okay, well, now I'm the guy that sent you over to Dr. Gilmore, so how much do I get? Well, 10% of $40,000 is $4,000. In the course of a year, I probably have 10 patients that are going to have brain tumors. And where do I send my 10 patients? Do I send them to 10 different brain surgeons? Hell no. I send them all to the same brain surgeon, Dr. Gilmore, who sends me $4,000 as a finder fee for each one of them. That's a hell of a deal. First of all, you come in and you ain't feeling good. You're getting headaches. And so I give you these tests, and I charge you $5,000 to do all these tests. So I made my money as a general practitioner. And after I get all through with the tests, I come to the conclusion that you've got a brain tumor, and I send you over to Dr. Gilmore, who sends me another $5,000 as a finder's fee for doing the work. So I get paid as much for doing nothing as I did for finding out what was wrong with you. Isn't that special? That's what I think the banks are doing with the insurance companies. That's why they say, well, we're not going to give you a mortgage unless you have life insurance and hurricane insurance and all this other stuff. So buy it from anybody you want, but starting to get a picture here of where we're going here. In 1997, State Farm returned only 48 cents on the dollar, Allstate 59 cents, and Farmers 61 cents. This is their returns. This is in Texas. Now, excessive and unnecessary fraud litigation and injury claims have pushed the average insurance premium to over $774 in 1996. Now, this is just in Texas. See? This is the Joint Economic Committee study, 105th Congress. And so, 1996, so I said Texas, that was the one before. This one here is the United States, 774. 1996, the average auto insurance was impact on cities and the poor. That's the name of the article. 774 is the average number. The current tort system fails to fully compensate serious injuries. On average, victims with losses between $25,000 and $100,000 recover only one-half, 56% of their losses, while those with losses over $100,000 recoup just 9% of their losses. Now, I'm going to tell you a story here as we progress along called the Emil Crow story. And I'll come to that. And I'll show you what happens and why, how the claims adjuster gets compensated, how he gets paid. And the system is set up to screw you. Just that's the way it is. Nothing personal. It's just business. Now, I need to sell this to you, but I don't need to pay you. See, I'm going to sell you the insurance policy. I don't want to collect the premium, but I don't want to pay out anything out the claims window. Now, insurance companies do pay claims. I don't deny it. But they don't pay all the claims that they owe. And when they pay a claim, they don't pay all the money that they owe. And they know that if they make you go to trial, that's a hell of a neat deal, because if you go to trial, you got to hire a lawyer. And the minute you hire a lawyer, our lawyer makes a deal with your lawyer to double-cross you, and then we make it coming and going. It's kind of like a stockbroker. Like, he always makes money. It doesn't make any difference whether the market's going up or going down. He gets paid his commission, whether you're buying or selling. He gets paid his commission. Doctors get paid that way. Insurance agents get paid that way. Insurance companies get paid that way. Now, I mentioned that to you in the first program here. I said, you know, if you've got a $100,000 client, 9% of the loss will be covered by insurance, and they'll screw you out of the other 91%. So number one, they have calculated in the whole $100,000 loss. They did that in the premium. So if they paid out the whole $100,000, they got just exactly the profit margin that they expected, which was about 89 cents on the dollar. So we're programming this thing in to make 89 cents out of every dollar's worth of premium. Now, can we do better than that? Sure, if we don't pay you what we owe you, then we can steal the other 11 cents from you. Or 5 cents of it, or 4 cents of it, or whatever. Now, auto insurance in the inner cities is prohibitively expensive. The average premium for a 38-year-old female with a clean driving record in central Los Angeles is $3,500 a year. Now, uninsured motorists are a widespread problem for many cities. Some areas in Los Angeles and San Diego are estimated to have uninsured motorist rates of over 90%. Over 90%. Well, hell, you know, Los Angeles isn't unique. You know, you've got Philadelphia, Chicago, Miami, Dallas, Houston, every major city in the country. And you have a large number of uninsured motorists. And these guys, you know, they buy the insurance for 30 days or 60 days, let it lapse, and then, see, because in a lot of places you can't get your car registered without insurance. So you go down, you buy a 30-day policy, register your car, let it lapse, and drive uninsured for 11 months. See how simple that is? So since the cost to provide insurance in urban areas is so much greater, there are often large disparities in premiums between inner cities and suburbs, frequently exceeding $1,000. Now, although accidents in cities are less severe than accidents elsewhere, they are much more likely to result in an injury claim. For example, for every 100 accidents in Los Angeles, there are 99 bodily injury claims, over twice the average for the rest of California. So if you're living in the city, see, you people in the city, you want to screw the insurance company. And so you're going to make a false claim for a bodily injury. Oh, my back! My back! Oh, my back is out! Okay. And so they know that, and so they have to price that into the premium. So they price it into the premium, and if it's under $5,000, they pay like a slot machine. If it's $100,000, they don't pay. They make you sue. And then when it's all said and done, get this. I saw a case one time that drug on for 7 years. 7 years. Now, if the case drags on for 7 years, the insurance company never pays you a dime. What they do is give you the interest off of the money that they've got invested. So the optimum is called the rule of 72. The rule of 72. That's where you take the interest rate times 7.2 years, which will equal the principal. And as a result of that, they never pay you a dime. They give you the interest off of the money for the 7 years. And the insurance industry and every insurance claims adjuster is instructed. They know. They guard their principal with their lives. They never let go of the principal. They only give you the interest. All right, so that's the way that game is played. Thought I'd share that one with you. Those contracts are written for the benefit of the insurance company and the insurance industry. They're written against you, and then they're codified in the law. And always remember now that your creator told you, don't practice limited liability. Practice strict liability. I'll show you more why as we proceed along. Hey, I got to remind you that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.